I think what Laz created was this, which is what I see on the entrance list so far for next year. It's not necessarily people that want to win. It's people that want to see how far we can take it. Right, so, yeah. Like, that's where you need everyone else. So I think that's what's kind of cool. You know, you can't, I couldn't have made it to 250 miles if Will had dropped out at, like, 200, you know?
Kia ora, everyone. That was Maggie Goodturl. I'm Matt Raymond.
I'm Eugene Bingham.
And this is Dirt Church Radio. Interesting conversations with interesting runners.
Scott Running wanted us to add a youthful feel to our advertising. They wanted something fresh, something cool, something with wider appeal. Not two 40-somethings stammering over each other. I mean, who can even tell them apart?
Wait, what?
Scott Running emailed me.
You've got an email?
It's 2019. Jeez. Okay, Matthew. That's us.
And remember, you can get 15% off all Scott Running packs and poles by using the code DCRSCOTT at scottrunning.nz. That's DCRSCOTT at scottrunning.nz.
And Dirt Church Radio is proud as punch to be sponsored by Scott Running.
Further Faster are excited to share a competition which is very close to their hearts, and this is called Her Mountain Calls.
I feel we need a jingle for that.
We do. Help the woman that you love or I love, or any woman we love or you love, when you as in you guys, not
would
us.
The jingle have some yodeling?
Share over $8,000 worth of adventure gear prizes. You're really, you're bringing
maybe
the tone down.
This cowbells? Is about
celebrating the women that we love.
True. Yes,
not
seriously.
Yodeling.
All right.
But if it was the top twins that I loved, who are famous yodelers, they might
they are
like.
Very
anyway,
good yodelers.
$8,000 worth of adventure gear prizes and an amazing photo shoot. Basically, head along to furtherfaster.co.nz and you'll see the Her Mountain Calls banner on the front of their website. They're giving the chance three amazing women to win $3,000 worth of gear from Montaigne and Sierra Design, $1,500 worth of sailwear boots, three adventure photo shoots with Endeavour Media, three courses with OENZ, three guided trips with Adventure by Nature, a group coaching session with Feed and Fitness, and three double passes for a year-long subscription to the online community Why She Adventures, three year-long magazine subscriptions to Wilderness Magazine, plus more from Top Sport Kayaks and Nourish Your Moves.
Some yodeling lessons?
There would, I mean, maybe you could.
Could talk
what's
to
with
about
you
it.
And women and yodeling,
no,
dude?
That's
problematic.
Women. I didn't say women.
Well, it's a woman-specific
thing. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Anyway, furtherfaster.co.nz.
You were the one who mentioned the top twins.
Exclude the yodeling. If you go to myspringenergy.co.nz and use the code DCRSPRING, you'll get 10% off any one of their delicious, nutritious, natural supplements. It's not even supplements, it's food. It's food you use while you're running or being active.
Food you can hold in a pouch.
You can mash it up and you can just smash that bananary mess into your face like you're throwing a bag of laundry angrily down a stairwell. That's how I eat gels.
Yeah, it's true. There is a sort of a trail, trail etiquette around eating food, isn't there?
So yeah,
and there's always that awkward moment when you're like stuffing a gel in your face, and you've got you know, someone comes around the corner.
It's sticky. It's making you gag, but not spring
not
energy.
Spring energy. That's the thing.
I'm waiting on my supply, and I literally, actually, totally am waiting on my supply of hemp oil infused speed nut without the caffeine. I'm still not.
Oh, that sounds good.
I'm still not with the name. I think you need to change the name of Speed Nut. But
I think you just need to get over it.
I think you need to go and listen to more 90s hip hop, and then you'd know why that's a problematic name. But anyway, it's delicious.
What about Power Rush? Do you have a problem with that?
No, that sounds like a great like 80s heavy metal band. Sounds like a thrash metal band.
Long Haul? You have a problem with that?
That sounds like a song trucking, that Power Rush released on their third album.
Trucking Adjacent?
Into the Night. Yeah. myspringenergy.co.nz for 10% off with the code DCRSPRING.
Dirt Church Radio.
Don't we sound good?
We sound much better. Thank you, Patreon patrons.
Quickly, we've got, for the first time ever in 68 episodes, we are speaking on a microphone each.
Yay. Instead of like crowding together sort of shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, in one big t-shirt. Now we're, yeah, anyway.
Anyway, we made it. Episode 68. Maggie Gutierrez.
Maggie Gutierrez. Fantastic.
Can't quite believe it, actually.
Yeah. And to, again, to break down the fourth wall, you know, inside the sausage factory or the veggie tube factory, more appropriate for us, we've just spoken to her. So we're banging this out in real time. So that was a, we just had the most amazing conversation.
This is like Dirt Church Radio breaking news.
It is. It is. Yeah. And if you don't know, if you've been living under a rock, perhaps.
Why do people always say that?
Well, I think because Wi-Fi doesn't go under a rock.
And if you lived under a rock, you'd be like squashed.
Well, there'd be a hole in the ground. It wouldn't be like a rock, then flat. It's not the crucible. More weight.
If you live under a rock, does it affect your ears?
I think what they're saying is you're just isolated from
you can't read
the
stuff.
Rest of connection. From anyway, we're bearing the lead.
Right, yeah. Anyway, if you have been living under a rock.
Or in a
cave.
Yeah. Maggie Gutierrez.
Last person standing.
Yeah, at Big's Backyard Ultra in Tennessee a few weeks back. And we talked to Will Hayward, we talked to Katie Wright, and we talked to Maggie, and it's fantastic. So she was gracious enough to speak with us, and it's been a hectic couple of weeks and probably globally fatiguing for Maggie, so she made some time.
Although we did I intro'd the show last week with I had stuffed up the timing. That was our supposed to be a conversation with Maggie because they had daylight saving and I messed it up.
Stupid daylight saving.
But the good thing that came out of that is that Zach Bitter dropped around to see her. Zach Miller, which I thought was the most Colorado thing ever.
I thought the most Colorado thing ever was Zach, that Instagram story of Zach Miller doing, trying to do like jumps on that fruity stand-up elliptical bike that he rides.
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing. I can. Anyway.
Hey, thanks for all the feedback on last week's show. I mean, Damien Hall, and you know, was a lot of fun and an important message as well, and taught us some new language.
Yeah,
and anatomy.
Yeah.
Going from a bimble, risking chafing in the bathing suit area.
That's right.
Who knew?
Old Shoe. That was a town that he forgot to mention that he lives by.
Oh, that's true.
Where does he live? Box.
Yes.
Yeah.
Near Bath.
Box near Bath, just south of Old Shoe.
We really must take him up on his offer to pace us at Paddy Buckley Round.
That would be fantastic. You know,
before we do UTMB. We're going to have to paddle there, though.
Yeah, yeah. Because we're not massive hypocrites or climate change deniers. No. Anyway.
How have you been?
Yeah, it's really interesting talking to Maggie about, she was talking about how if training becomes a chore, I found myself standing in my garage on Saturday in tears, trying to explain to my wife why I needed to go for a long run because I'd missed it, and then sort of had this lightning bolt moment going, what are you up to? You know, I don't, work's been busy the last couple of weeks. I've missed a couple of long runs. But at the same time, I didn't want to go out and do them. So I went inside and had a sandwich and a lie down, and I felt much better.
I think that was a much better call. And, you know, I hope I'm not breaking confidence here, but
you said
you texted me and said, I think I've overtrained.
Yeah, I have.
I think you've overlifed as well.
Overlifed,
you know?
Yeah.
Like you've had some crazy shifts at work.
Yeah.
You've been trying to train for an ultra marathon, you know, chuck into that, the whole craziness.
This whole thing.
Big's backyard, this whole burden.
Yeah.
You know, we had, it was full on, wasn't it?
Yeah,
for us.
Full on a couple
you
of
know,
weeks.
I mean, those athletes think they had it hard, you know, but, you know, plus family life, plus everything that's been going on. It's been, you know, it's tiring.
It is tiring. And I think that it's even more important to listen to what Maggie has to say in the upcoming interview because it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
About, you know, training shouldn't feel like it's so much of a chore. But other than that, I feel actually having a bit of rest, I feel great.
And you got a new mic.
Got a new mic.
I did the dad joke of Matt, meet Mike.
Look, anyway. We started the Patreon a couple of weeks ago and everyone's been really kind. It's been so useful and we've been able to purchase another mic, which is a great start, and I'm speaking into that mic now. But yeah, we're up on Dirt Church Radio, patreon.com/dirtchurchradio, and if you want to support us, that'd be wonderful, but no pressure as usual.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, you know, it's enabled you to tell the difference between us. As Lily cruelly pointed out in your fantastic Scott ad.
Yeah.
I don't think, maybe we should have like got one that warped one of our voices.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, goodness me. You'll hear it anyway. But
anyway, hey, Lily's
Children
a
star. Are cruel. No, Lily's children gonna, are cruel. She's
Lily's going to take over from us.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, right. That was a bit low powered, wasn't it?
Do it again.
Mm. Oh, there you go. That's better.
Huh. Wow. This is a bit silly. And before we start, stuff you should know is, hey, Maggie Guttel, when I said I want to pick you up at the airport, or we'll pick you up at the airport if you come down, I was really referencing the whole Stephen Colbert, Jacinda Ardern thing, not being creepy.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah, yeah.
As I did clarify in the interview, but I really feel we need to say that out loud again.
Mm, mm. Hey, did you catch the Mary Kane stuff that sort of broke on Friday, like a tidal wave? So Mary Kane she was a US, she was the fastest girl in America, as she said. She was a US high school track athlete, amazing. Got, I don't know, I was going to say selected, but it's not selected, you know, got picked up by Nike Oregon Project and Alberto Salazar to go and train with them. Went off there all excited. And, you know, it was only on Friday, really, that the true extent of the hell that she went through there emerged when she revealed that basically she accused Salazar of, you know, bullying her, particularly over her weight, would just constantly go on about her weight, and made her really unwell and unhealthy. And as a consequence, her performance suffered, but more importantly, her life suffered until she reached a point where she was, you know, desperate and self-harming and rang her parents, who said, get on the next plane, get the hell out of there, and kind of rescued her really from the Nike Oregon Project. And what's been astonishing is the fallout from that, not only kind of, I mean, because what she had to say about the bullying from, you know, older male coach going on about her weight is not new. Lots of female athletes have suffered this over the years and have talked about it over the years, but she did very powerfully, I think, in combination with the attention that there's been on Alberto Salazar and the Nike Oregon Project over the wider sanction in the last couple of months, or last couple of weeks, last couple of years, really, let's face it, really made this thing go off. And I think it started a conversation, which is really important and one that we should all be having. And importantly, too, it hasn't just confined itself to young female athletes. What she was talking about with the issue around weight is not just a female issue.
No, it's very much not. But I think what is more important, and I'll preface this with, I was at work that day, so I caught up a little bit about what was going on. There was a combination of a very busy day, and, you know, I was working in
the
an emergency
we
department
about, yeah,
with people who were self-harming at the time, so I was busy sort of doing that, and then, you know, I'd catch a little bit of this. And I also, I mean, I maxed out my New York Times articles for the month, so I couldn't see behind the paywall, but
I watched the YouTube clip.
What I got from it, What I got from it was both a sense of, you know, this incredibly ruinous experience, and also the response from Nike. They sort of came back quite hard at her and were like, you know, trying to do what big corporations do, which is smear and sort of, you know, cast dispersions on her character. And,
exactly.
And people are complicated.
Yeah.
I guess the thing for me is, and I you know, this is probably a very unnuanced, you know, unnuanced response. The guy sounds like a bit of a scumbag, and I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know a lot about that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, he hasn't gone yet because he'll fight, but
of course he will, because he's narcissistic, but, you know,
But I think, you know, it was so wonderful to see Mary say what she did, and also to see so many other athletes come forward and speak out in support of her. Shalane Flanagan.
Kara Goucher.
Kara's been talking for years about this. So, you know, it was amazing. And, you know, Shalane Flanagan coming forward and saying, I'm sorry, I saw you in pain and I didn't do anything. I didn't think it was my business. You know, it is our business. It is our business to help our friends. It is our business to, you know, recognize when our friends are in trouble and in pain and say something and just say, are you okay? You know, Bigger shoes.
And I want to talk about Luke McCallum as well, who's a New Zealand athlete who...
Has been raising this issue
for both men and women. And he talked about when he was training in Kenya, and he just put up that photo again of him, you know, and he says he's 10 kilos heavier than he was when he was in Kenya and performing better. And yeah, it's a massive healthier. Issue. But I think the main thing, so weight is an issue. However, what's also an issue is not being a scumbag and screaming at your athletes when you're in a position of power. I mean, totally. There's a difference between motivating and sort of crushing,
Absolutely. All power to you. Right. So there was a few races we need to catch up on. Last week we mentioned the Aorangi Undulator event results, but we didn't mention the A100 3-day event results. So in the women, Sue Crowley won in 15:08, which was fourth overall.
Epic.
Yeah. Kate Titch-Annan, 16 hours 15, and Elizabeth Palmer, 18 hours 42.
Fantastic. And the men, it was first, was Timothy Pickering in 12:48, Joshua Campbell bringing in second at 13:07, and Sam Edridge, 13:56.
Mm. So well done, you guys, a week later. The Valley Ultra.
Oh, it looks so good.
It and
the
did,
Craigieburn
didn't it?
Ranges.
Was that the first year of it?
I'm not sure.
I think it is, in the Craigieburn Ranges.
Looks amazing.
Yeah, which people could take on the Whole Hog, which was a climb of
3,000 metres.
3,000 metres.
So that's 9,000 feet for those in America. Yep. And over a mixed 57 train. I mean, it's no joke. 9,000 feet.
Yeah.
57.
Couple of familiar names there.
Yeah. Weston Hill, who's been on the podcast and won last week. He won the
Mount Summers. In a record time, I think. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So he came home and first. Silas Carey was second and Andy Palmer third.
I just see that there was 38 minutes. I think 38 or 39 minutes between West and Silas again. You know, last week he gapped Grant, didn't he?
Yeah.
Run solo. There you go. Well done, West. And in the women's, Nancy Zhang, 6 hours 23. There you go. And Lara Scott and Rose was second, and Rose Pearson third. So well done to you. I just want to mention too, not strictly kind of in our field, but I thought it was worthy of mentioning. Sally Gibbs broke a world record for the W55 in the 10,000 metres on Sunday, Saturday night at Newton Park. Now, Sally is a remarkable athlete. She started running reasonably late and she's just gone from strength to strength. She already holds numerous New Zealand age group records. This is her first world record. And it was set up for her to run. Well, not, you know, the event was a legit event, and they had they had a pacer, Tim Raybone, pace them through to 36:40, and the pack basically dwindled to just Sally, and she looked like she was going to fall off, and then she just hung in there and ended up claiming this world record, which is incredible. So well done, Sally. Ruby Muir was next fastest woman. So Ruby ran 39:57 and Sally's time was 36:46. So
Sally's would be over twice Ruby's age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remarkable. Remarkable.
Or close to.
Yeah. Just wanted to mention too, the Crazy K's is on in Christchurch this weekend. It's, you know, over there amongst the hills or the volcanoes of Banks Peninsula. And it includes 100 miler where Chris Bisley will be going for his fourth 100 mile win of the year.
Yeah.
Sit down, which will be pretty extraordinary. And it's part of the Southern Seasons Miler Challenge, which a few of you are still in contention for. So good luck to everyone.
I caught up with Kunal yesterday, our friend, up at the Trig. We were both running in Riverhead. We're both out after work. And, you know, for those who know, it's a circuit. You can either come one or two ways. He's going down to Crewe.
Is he?
He's super excited.
With Tanya?
Tanya.
Yeah. Fantastic. Oh, wow. Well, we'll look for an epic race report from Kunal. No pressure.
No pressure.
Yeah.
Right, on to Greatest Run Ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. It might just be a run around the block or something that's sung to you for some reason. You can send it in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com or via our social media. And this week, it's from our friend Tina White, who runs with us out in Riverhead and sent us in this. So, hi, Eugene and Matt. I've been hesitant to send in my greatest run ever because there have been so many amazing runs and I feel that there are so many more to come. But I figured I'd better record one before they all roll together as one. And looking forward to catching up and running together with you soon. It was one of those sunny spring mornings. The birds were chirping and I was feeling full of excitement for the adventure ahead. I dropped the kids off at school and kindy and headed out to the trailhead. I ran, skipped and climbed my way along the cliffs of Tehinga for an out and back. I was taking it easy as I knew I had a big day ahead of me and I expected my body to tire before my mind wanted it to. The views were breathtaking as usual and the wild west coast waves were smashing the rocks below. Usually a tourist highway, there were only a couple of other people out on the trail, so I felt I had the place to myself. Could it get any better? Well, it just did. I met up with my friend Stu, and we enjoyed the return leg together. Stu, with the pace of a cheetah and the stamina of a wildebeest, kindly let me set the pace, which of course included some shuffling and photo ops. I thought that by now surely my legs and lungs would tell me to stop, but I was feeling surprisingly good. After having a bite of food at the car boot, we trotted off down the hill to Goldie's Bush. It was just magical, straight into the lush bush under the shady canopy, which was so welcome as it must have been around midday by then. The compulsory swing bridge photo was taken before we pushed onto the gem, the Mokoroa waterfall. While climbing over a fallen tree which had blocked the trail, Stu gave me a look which I can only imagine translated to WTF. I think we were both feeling the effect of the K's and the vert, but all the while I was feeling like a pig in shit. This was my happy place. There were some deep convos, light laughs, and the shared enjoyment of what we were experiencing, how lucky I felt to be doing this, and how amazing our bodies were that they can take us to these places. Of course, there were moments when I felt tired, but I was surprised and stoked when I realized, gosh, I feel like I could just keep going. After a final race up the hill back to the car, we enjoyed a picnic in the boot of my station wagon, reflecting on what a beautiful place this was. Covered in mud, scratches and sweat, I put my mum hat back on and headed off to kindy and school to collect the kids, still buzzing for the rest of the day. This was my greatest run ever, and thank you, Stu.
Wow.
Yeah.
So cool.
And knowing Tina, who is, you know, she's shuffling, she's fast. And
she's super fast
and she's a super good trail runner, like really good in the rough stuff. Yeah, what a great day. And we know Stu as well. And for those of us, you know, those of you who don't know the Tehinga walkway, you're really missing out because it is, it's amazing.
It's one of Auckland's gems, really. It really is. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Tina. You know, don't hesitate to send in your greatest runs ever, because all of them are special, all of them tell a different story. And so thank you for putting, I was gonna say pen to paper, but keyboard to paper.
I'd something. Like a written greatest run ever, actually.
That would be good.
Yeah
But yeah, just send them in, because what, you know, you've got something special to tell. Everyone is special, everyone has a tale. And we enjoy getting them, and people love reading them and hearing them. I mean, we look at the stats of where people are looking on the website, and greatest run ever is
right
always
up there.
Right up there. Yeah. So, right.
Maggie Guterl.
Speaking of greatest runs ever.
Yeah. So, Maggie Guterl won the world championships of the last person standing. So, Biggs Backyard Ultra in Tennessee. She lives in Durango, Colorado, and works for Tailwind Nutrition, long time trail and ultra runner, several hundred mile finishes, notably was eighth at Western States in 2016, has attempted Barclay multiple times, and just went out and knocked it out of the park, really. We've spoken to Will and Katie, who were two of the four people who DNF'd, but Maggie took it home, 250 miles,
60 laps.
Yep. So this was an amazing conversation. We're so grateful and so thankful for Maggie making time for us to have it. So here we go, Maggie Guterl. Digits Radio. Okay, coming to us all the way from Colorado, we have an amazing treat. Kia ora, Maggie Guterl. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you? You pronounced my name perfectly.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear. thank you for making time to speak with us. I know that this has been a couple of weeks in the making since you finished Biggs and coped with the aftermath of that. How are you feeling?
I've only run three times and no more than 3 miles, but been going to the gym and biking, and I feel pretty wrecked. So, but I'm not like rushing it or anything. So I feel good.
That's good to hear that you're not, you know, back out into a solid training plan. And I guess it's quite a globally challenging, a global challenge to your system running that far. Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone's like, well, how long will it take you to recover? I'm like, I don't know. I've never run that far, so I have no idea. I mean, typically when I run a 100-miler, I feel like it's 6 weeks before, you know, I can just go 20 miles and not feel like really, really wrecked.
Right. It's something I think we struggle with. It, and hanging out with lots of North American athletes, and also, you know, we've got a couple of dudes who and we run with here, is that notion of the off season is something that I think, because New Zealand's largely quite temperate, we tend to go all year round, and hearing someone say, well, it takes me about 6 weeks to recover, it seems really sensible.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like that's a thing with ultra runners, is like we run so far, but sometimes, I mean, until I had like a burnout in 2017, I feel like there was no off season. You just recovered, train for something else, or you just hope you recover and then run something else. Whereas like marathoners, they will take, you know, pick two races a year maybe or whatever, and they'll have an off season. It makes sense.
Yeah. Is that something you had to learn? Was there, you know, is that ability to actually take, no, I need to stop and just recover?
Yeah. I mean, you get pretty caught up. And also there's so many races you want to run, and there's only so many months in a year. And then by 2017, I mean, also you do well in a race and then you're like, oh, I can do, and then I can do this. And then you shoot higher and it's more training, and that intensity of training, and that focus is hard to mentally maintain, at least for me. I have been lucky enough to not have too many injuries. I mean, nothing that has ever really sidelined me for a long period of time. But mentally, just training becomes a chore. And I think that's when you need a break.
Yeah. That's always a good sign, isn't it? When you're struggling to get out the door, it's a sign that you probably need to take some rest, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, you kind of have to recognize like, oh, you know, everyone has trouble getting out the door. It's rainy, it's cold, but then, you know, when it's just all around, it's a slog, and yeah, that's when you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard on your, you know, adrenal glands and all that too. We forget that it's not just a physical muscle thing, you know?
Absolutely.
No, it's that's the thing. It's probably those big muscles. I mean, yeah, your quads are going to be sore. They'll get better, but it's all those really, you know, elegant and discreet systems within yourself, you know, and even like your fascia, your endocrine system, your chemistry, your gut, everything like that, your brain. I mean, God, you know, you really gave your noggin a flogging, to quote the divine Ned Flanders, you know, like with that amount of work that you did.
Yeah. Mentally, I mean, just to keep that focus, in training, you know, you have to be excited about the goal, but I mean, to do that month after month, it's hard. Like, I'm in awe of people who can just like run, you know, there's this guy here in the US doing, he's aiming for 50 hundredths in a year.
What? That's like one a week.
He was on, like, he finished 42 hundredths so far, and he's got like eight to go.
Does he get Thanksgiving and Christmas off or something?
I don't know. I mean, there's only 52 weeks in a year,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, it's, yeah. So he's got, yeah, 2 weekends off. I mean,
that's
insane. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very driven, isn't it? It's certainly all in. And it, I guess, I mean, if your life's set up for that, that's.
Yeah. I mean,
each
every.
To their own.
Yeah. I mean, that's not easy.
And is he doing a specific, sorry to like bury the lead a little bit, is he doing a specific type of 100, or is he just going like, for instance, like, you know, Western States,
like
Hard Rock, or this or that or the other?
Right. Well, I don't know. I feel like you can't be too picky. You kind of just have to do what fits in, right? I know that he just finished Pinhoti, which is in Alabama here, and it's not an easy one. So I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. Also, like, I think when people do that, sometimes they make up their own. So I don't know how that works. Yeah. I don't know if that's what he's doing or not, but
yeah, he's doing laps of his backyard. Speaking of which, I just love that we're talking to you, and there's someone that you are sort of blown away by their endurance feat. Having you've just run 250 miles, 60 hours, you know, pulled off something that most people on the planet are just totally blown away by, and here you are talking in awe of someone else. I kind of, wow.
it's easier
weird.
To do it all at once than after weekend after weekend.
But you did it hour after hour, which is, you know, phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. Have you kind of, has it, I mean, it's been a few weeks now. Has it sunk in what you did achieve?
Yeah, I mean, it finally did. Yeah, it took a while. I mean, after it happened, right as it was the most anticlimactic type finish.
Yeah.
Because I honestly, like, I didn't get to talk to Will a lot during the race, but we got to chat after, which is great. And I've been, you know, chatting with him off and on social media since, and he's awesome. But like, I got from his crew during, like, that he was the master of not DNFing. So I thought, there's no way this guy will quit. And I knew he wasn't going to. So I was pretty like confident was going to go for a long time. And I had no idea that he wasn't back.
Yeah.
So that was like, you know, within 30 seconds, you're like, oh my gosh, this might end. And then it ended. So it was like really 30 seconds to set in at that time.
Yeah.
And like, it was crazy. So yeah, it took like a week or so for me to be like, oh.
Right.
Yeah. Cause it is, it's just sort of snap. You've won. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even Laz was like, oh, this is weird. Cause he's like, usually someone will like kind of either turn around after a lap and say, I'm done. So like that other person's on a lap and everyone knows it's done, even if that other person doesn't.
Yeah.
Or they'll say, like last year, Courtney said, you know, Johan, you've won, enjoy your last lap.
Right.
And then, you know, everyone kind of gets ready to celebrate in 47 to 50 minutes.
Whereas Will was running around in the hills thinking he was in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I know, that was crazy. I kind of like, a part of it, I'm like, I wish that maybe, I was like, well, maybe we both would have timed out if I stayed with him, but he was behind me, right?
Yeah.
I fell and then he was right behind me. And I'm like, oh, did I slow down? Like, how long have I been like recovering from this fall? Cause I picked myself up and was kind of like, ah. And so I sped up a little. And then I was like, afterwards, when I realized he hadn't come in, I'm like, shoot, maybe I should have stayed with him. We could have done it together. But I was nervous about the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You've got to think about your own race.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it got bad. I could see how if he was really like exhausted.
Mm.
I mean, I had a point, I had my headlamp down facing towards the ground and it was raining, pouring rain. And I'm looking at rocks and leaves and there were so many leaves that had fallen that day. I was like, am I on the trail? And I looked up for the pink ribbons. I'm like, yep. And if you're just following like the ground and you get disoriented, like it's not that surprising that he got confused. Maybe he was in somewhere else.
And what a spectacular way to tap out, though. You know, like there's getting back and going, I really don't think I can do this again. And then there's actually running yourself to the point where you're hallucinating that you're in a different country. You know,
yeah. Like that's what people. I think he is obviously the more mentally strong, amazing performance was Will, because I mean, I don't know, like I had a great race and I was mentally in it and I was like, this is what I'm going to do. Like to stay in it after 36 hours, you think it's over and you're one of the last people coming in each time, you haven't eaten. You're just decided to like, you know, your decision is no longer your own. You're just going out there again for the sake of the race and the competition. Like, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a mentally strong guy. Like the entrance list next year.
The roster looks hectic.
Yeah.
But people are like, oh, Guillaume and Johan are back and all these people. And I'm like, yeah, but Will's back. Like, can't imagine, you know, now he knows what he knows. And like, he's already like, you know, a lot of those people that are last two have been strong the entire time, you know, until they're not, but Will wasn't. So, I mean, what can you do when he has like, when he's actually eating?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, wow. Yeah. It's such an interesting, I mean, I think what especially has captivated me with this whole format is the sense that if you're competing to win, right? And everyone's competing to finish. But everyone that we've spoken to, and especially, you know, Katie, Will, and yourself, talks about almost, it becomes this, you are both competing to finish, you're both encouraging each other on so that you can go longer, and in some way you're almost sort of becoming more than the sum of your parts in that you're serving the race itself. You know, like you're serving, it becomes more than just this sort of, you know, I've got 162 kilometers to go. So once I get to, you know, 142, there are 20 kilometers to go and we can measure that metric. There's no metric of distance. It's only this sort of collective. It's fascinating.
I think what Laz created was this, which is what I see on the entrance list so far for next year, it's not necessarily people that want to win. It's people that want to see how far we can take it. Right, so like that's where you need everyone else. So I think that's what's kind of cool. You know, I couldn't have made it to 250 miles if Will had dropped out at like 200, you know?
Yeah. I guess, and it's the sort of the logical endpoint of, you know, when you go out for a run with your friend and you turn around to them and go, I never run that fast when I'm by myself, or I never do that when I'm by myself.
Yeah.
It's that power of the collective.
Yeah.
So how, oh, go on, Eugene.
No, I was going to say, from your perspective, I mean, were you in it to win, or were you in it to go a certain distance? I mean, everyone was talking about certain milestones that were coming up. What was your, you know, going into it, what did you want to achieve?
Well, both. And yeah. I've thought that, you know, Guillaume's always joking about 100 hours or 400 miles. I mean, no one's passed 300 yet.
Yeah.
So thinking you have, you know, 400, you know, if you go into it kind of thinking you're going to run for 4 days, then, you know, then you're at 3.5. It doesn't seem like you've made, you know, what you're expecting to go. So that helps. And yeah, I mean, I really wanted to win. I thought I could. So I was like, what if I do what Johan did and just take the decision part of it out and just be like, you're not quitting. So you're going to go as far as the other person's going to go and one more.
Mm.
So I just did that. And, you know, I don't know. Can I replicate it next year? Like, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, and then like anything could happen. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people had that. I think Guillaume has that mental thing going into it. But like, you know, your knee could just blow up to the size of a grapefruit and you can't move anymore. And like Gavin Woody, who was third last year, we had a little thing where we were like, we'll run together at night so that we can like, you know, during the day, and then we'll have each other to kind of like whatever. And at a point he couldn't run past like 10:30, he couldn't run faster than like an 11-minute pace or something. That's in miles, by the way. Yeah, so we're, I don't know. It's like, they're like, well, 11 kilometers slow. but I needed to run faster to stay awake, so we couldn't really link up. And then I know it's harder when you just kind of slow down and know you can't go that much longer.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. So you'd gone in it to win it, and then, you know, as kind of always happens, doesn't it? There's a big group, and then suddenly you turn around and the group has shrunk. And, you know, quite quickly it went from, well, there was the four of you going, Dave and Katie and Will and you. And then, you know, it went very quickly. Dave and Katie sort of dropped out in quick succession, and it was the two of you. Did that, you know, what does that do to your, you know, are you ignoring all of that, or are you sort of still, you know, do you start to think, oh, I'm going to win?
Oh, I went into panic mode because I thought that, you know, Dave Proctor looked really strong.
Yeah.
Well, I thought all four of them looked strong. And then within two laps, Katie, we saw her on the out and back and she was cringing in pain. I'm like, oh, Katie, what's wrong? She's like, my leg. So I kind of thought like, oh, this is like, she's on some of her last laps. And I saw her in the woods when I came out of the woods in the loop, and she was standing there waiting to give everyone a hug and say like, whatever, which is sweet. And I was like, damn, like, I almost wanted to cry. And it's like, that was sad. Cause I was like, I really wanted her to be me and her at the end.
Cause
then everyone would be like, well, a woman's going to win no matter what. But, and then Dave like had two bad laps, and I was like, whoa, this is going to end sooner than I like thought. Like, I was gung ho. I wanted to get to 300 miles. I wanted to win it with more than Johan did last year. I thought that would be cool. So I said to Guillaume, like, he was, you know, kind of just spectating at that point. You know, you gotta keep Will in it, because this can't end yet. So he gave Will a little pep talk. And then I came back the next loop and he was crewing for Will. So I was like, well, okay. So, and then Guillaume's such a positive, like, nice guy. Like, I mean, so I think he kind of, you know, and Will had a good crew and everything, but I think, you know, anyone just shoving food in your face, and Andy Pearson was helping too, another guy from California.
Will talked about it as always, he was almost coerced into going out each lap.
They were like just handing him, like Andy, we talked about it after, at the next day after breakfast, and Andy's like, oh no, he was like a robot. He was like, he would just come in, we'd shove food in his face and give him a new bottle. And then he would just like a zombie walk to the start line again. And that's all he did, lap after lap, for like 8 hours he did that.
Wow. What's your background? What attracts you to this type of event? I mean, had you always done endurance sports? Like as a growing up, was that part of what you were doing, or you come
to
this later?
No, it was a later in life thing. In my 30s, I started running ultras. I'll be 40 in August. And then, I think a lot of people find ultra running later, just cause like I didn't run competitively in high school or college or anything, but, the mental challenge kind of really appeals to me. And I'm honestly not like the fastest person. But I just like the challenge to see how far you can push yourself, and that this format's kind of cool because it's more mental than anything. Mm-hmm. And I really like enjoyed following Guillaume and Harvey 3 years ago. And then I went last year, and I made it, I think I was like sixth to last, and I was still disappointed with that because I knew I could do better. And like, you learn something every time. I mean, I even learned, like, I feel like I had a perfect race, but I still learned things that I could do better. So like, it's just cool and it's fun. Like, it's like my most, it's not a race where you'll like never see anyone, like I ran with Courtney DeWalter last year for a day and a half, like in no race would I ever run near her. Like,
yeah. Right. She's
too fast. Like, but it's cool, and you just like, now I talk to Katie once in a while on social media, and Will and like Anna from Sweden and like all these cool people all over the globe. It's awesome.
Yeah. I read somewhere too that I don't know how you quite expressed it, but that you like suffering, that you, there's an enjoyment that comes after suffering.
Yeah. It makes the comforts more rewarding.
Yeah.
So true. That Cracker Barrel breakfast and like that bed, that hotel bed that night was like really, really comfortable and really enjoyable.
Where does that come from? Well, I mean, I get it. I really understand what you mean by that. That if you're prepared to suffer, then you benefit. it's like,
yeah,
there's a reward that comes. But where does that come from for you, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's just maybe some of us it's just like a human nature thing where we just kind of crave hard work to make it, more rewarding. Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
There's a social media.
Will, that might be a question for Dr. Will Hayward.
That's right.
He might psychology. Put you on one of
experiments. Yeah.
He graciously dodged all the psychology questions. There's a sort of social media guy over here. His name's Willie Waidoa. He says, "Do the mahi, get the treats." And mahi is Māori for work. So that's his.
Yeah.
Do the mahi, get the treats.
Oh, I like that. We should put that on our shirts for next year.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you already thinking of next year? Is that sort of, have you gone there already, or have you got, plans in between now, Barclay?
And, yeah, I have.
Obviously there's a lot, but how do you plan it out?
Well, I have Barclay to worry about.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm trying not to think about next year for Biggs because I was super excited about Biggs after last year as well. So, and it's a long way away. So I'll just try to focus on Barclay now. And it's totally different race. So,
yeah. So does that require different training?
Yeah. It's a lot of vert, a lot of going up and down. It's a lot of training. Like my first year of training this will be my third attempt. And I did it the last 3 years. The last year with the training wasn't perfect, and it has to be. So I am also I was in the process. I got a new job. I work for Tailwind Nutrition and, they're located in Durango, Colorado. So I was in the process of moving and like, there's a lot of life excuses I had, but training wasn't perfect. So I'm in one place now. I'm recovering and hopefully like mid-January or mid-December, I can kind of like get back into it a little bit and build up, and the training will be like what it was my first year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. You seem like you're in the perfect place, for high for altitude.
Yeah, we have altitude. So I feel like where I used to live in Pennsylvania, like in a suburb outside of Philadelphia. I think the terrain there, I would go to like central Pennsylvania or northern, kind of like by the Appalachian Trail. And there's some like really steep stuff there. I think that terrain is perfect for the terrain that's in Frozen Head State Park in Tennessee. I think it'll be more challenging to train here. Especially if they get a winter like last year where they got feet upon feet of snow or centimeters upon centimeters of snow.
That's right. We go both ways. It's fine.
I don't know. They got a lot and, you know, so I guess it would be like one training hill. Would you just go up and down and beat down the snow so you could, you know, whatever. You can't get up high and do the high altitude stuff because it's just too much.
Yeah.
But it'll be fun. It's just a different spot. I think altitude helped me at Biggs having that now. Right. I feel like less fatigued on the third day. Like I felt like, so that last lap where I saw Will behind me, I ran every single hill at the end because I knew the downhill was so much slower and I didn't feel like my heart was racing at all. I could just get deep breaths and like, you know, I've run in a 24-hour race where the second morning, you're just like, your heart's racing, you're just running a flat surface. And like, so I wonder if that's partly altitude.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I was in any better shape this time than any other time in my life. So I don't know.
So it's given you a bigger capacity that it's made your aerobic system more efficient and better.
Yeah.
Just living at altitude and training.
I think so. Yeah.
And it seems like you're kind of steeped in endurance sport now. You know, you got a job at Tailwind Nutrition. If I may ask, what is your role with Tailwind Nutrition?
Yeah, I'm the athletes and events manager.
Oh, wow. And what does that entail? Like coordinating athletes attending events?
We go to a lot of events. And we also support a lot of races, local races. So I coordinate that. And then we have a team called the Trailblazers and Tailwind Ambassadors. And actually, I think Katie Wright is one of the Tailwind Ambassadors, or maybe unofficially in New Zealand there. I think Mark Drew is maybe guy there.
Mark. Yep. Yeah, we know Mark.
Mark. He's trying to get me to go to Tarawera, and I'd love to.
I gotta see. Yeah.
We'll pick you up at the airport.
Okay. I love New Zealand is like my number one. If they said right now somebody was like, I'll give you a ticket, you can take off as long as you want, where do you want to go? I would say New Zealand for sure.
That's what our Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said to Stephen Colbert on the Stephen Colbert Show. She said, if you come to New Zealand, I'll pick you up at the airport. And he did, and she did.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That makes sense.
It's a really small place.
I feel like he can afford to just like, I'll go to New Zealand.
He's got
that's
the coin.
Pretty funny.
Yeah. He's been down here a whole bunch because he's a massive Lord of the Rings nerd and a Tolkien nerd, and he was in all the films and sitting across from Eugene, the only person in New Zealand who's not a massive Tolkien.
Yeah, I'm going to have my citizenship revoked because I haven't watched Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, really?
I know. I can't even call myself Kiwi, really. But yeah. Anyway. I guess trying to figure out. I hadn't ever thought of that. That Colorado might not be good for some kind of training. For
it's trailer. Too extreme.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well,
but,
yeah.
But it makes sense. I can see what you're talking about with the Appalachian Trail. You know, being a better kind of conditions.
Even terrain-wise, like the roots and rocks and stuff like that.
And Colorado, wow.
And weather-wise, like, I feel like the East Coast is pretty gnarly weather. Like, you could get rain and sleet and, like, just blowing cold, humid, raw air. And here it's kind of like, oh, it's snowing and then it's sunny and it's cold but dry. And it's kind of, like, cushy. Like, I miss humidity from living here. And I got, you know, Biggs was so humid.
Right.
Even when it was out cold, you're just damp and you know, a lot of people who aren't used to humidity, it was giving them problems.
Yeah. It's really nice to hear you talk about actually, cause we live in a kind of humid place, shouting for that, like going, it's, you know, got its challenges. It's good.
Yeah. Will, having lived in Auckland, which is where we live, which is a humid city, and now in Hong Kong, which is like the ultimate humid city.
And you
being used to humidity as well, I guess it makes sense that you two were,
survived.
Yeah. Yeah. So was the move to Colorado, was that for the job or did you choose to go to Colorado?
Yeah, no. I wanted to move to Colorado for a long time, but I moved here for Tailwind.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And Durango's actually in the Southwest. Like, it's so far from Denver and where everyone else lives in the state.
Yeah.
But it's really cool because we're by the San Juans, which is close to where, I mean, I'm an hour from Silverton where Hard Rock starts.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And what is it like working at Tailwind? I mean, it's kind of a amorphous thing, you know, this company that we all kind of know, we all, you know, it's in our packs and in our bodies. Mm-hmm. What's it actually like working there?
It's cool. I mean, it's a really small company. There's 20 people total.
Oh, wow.
So between production and warehouse and our main offices here, there's 20 people. And Jenny and Jeff are the founders. And everyone here was really excited about Biggs.
Yeah.
And it's great for the company too. Cause like we don't have like Courtney DeWalter is one of our athletes, but you know, like her main sponsor is Salomon, and like she has to wear Salomon to race in, and they obviously pay for her to go across all over the world. And, you know, but we're a small company. So like, it's cool to be able to have like exposure for Tailwind through all of this, which is cool. And I mean, I literally legit use mostly Tailwind. I mean, aside from like the real food I ate between laps, but like it played a huge part in my nutrition plan. And I think it's a large reason I wasn't puking my guts out. Like, you know, in humidity, I do terrible with, I can't eat real food in humidity. So, I think it was helpful. I never felt like bonky at all.
Yeah. So you just had those constant calories and liquid form.
Yeah.
And you kept them down.
Yeah.
And I guess it's one company. You can't come in on Monday morning. Well, it wasn't Monday morning, but when you can't come back to work and, you know, people, you know how in normal quote unquote jobs, people have no idea what you've done and just think that you're weird.
They're like, why are you walking like that?
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't even drive that far.
Yeah. But I think it's a tailwind. It sort of seemed a bit normal.
Yeah. Well, they still don't think I'm normal, but yeah.
There's a range.
I loved how one of the things you did to keep yourself kind of sharp, and I guess it's the equivalent of doing the crossword, is every lap you'd play Guess the Flavor. With the Tailwind,
they all tasted the same at a point. Yeah, I'm like, I don't even know. I have flavor fatigue, but like, I'm not tired of any flavors. Like,
yeah, right.
It just whatever.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell.
And it literally.
I guess that's good though. You don't want it to be overpowering, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it literally, you said it literally started, or not you said, but that it literally started in Jeff's kitchen. Like he one day
it
he
did.
Was like, I'm sick of. I'm gonna make something.
Yeah, well, wow. They told me a funny story, and I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you this, but oh well. They moved it to someone's garage because like they couldn't do it in a kitchen, so they pretended that was like a legit production area. But they always had beagles, and so they had this beagle. I forget the name of the beagle, but some beagle hairs ended up in bags of Tailwind, and so like somebody actually commented about how they found these small hairs. So our Tailwind is new and improved without beagle hairs.
Now 100% beagle free. I thought it would be the thing about, you know, your neighbor looks over the fence and there's people sort of carting bags of white powder in and out of the garage.
Oh yeah.
Distilling, you know, it's kind of odd looking, mixing things and
Yes. We still have jokes like that. I mean, there's still there's like our we have Dr. Art Zmax, like the guy who came up with the rebuild the recovery stuff. So he's our research and development guy, and there's a desk in his office of all kinds of bottles and beakers and little white powders, and it looks like, you know, something from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Was that show? You guys watched that show?
Oh,
there?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's great.
Yeah, the chemistry.
It wasn't traumatic at all.
No. So apart from sort of recovery and sort of just taking in the enormity of what you've achieved, you've also, I mean, there's been a lot of demands on you. You've had a lot of interviews and a lot of sort of, you know, people wanting a piece of you, really. How have you coped with that?
Well, it's cool. The podcast got to be a lot because it started to get hard to get work done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. It was like a whirlwind the first week, but also my coworkers are all really understanding and they were excited for me and stuff. I just got sick of talking about it a little bit, even though I love the race. And so I'm glad that your podcast, actually, we didn't do this until maybe 3 weeks, because like I haven't really talked about it in a while. Plus, you guys are asking me different questions than everyone else. And so you've already talked to Katie and Will. So I feel like, you know, everyone's kind of understood how the race played out and all that. So yeah. That's cool. But it's really cool because it could be like a once in a lifetime thing. It's been different.
Yeah. It's not that you came from nowhere, but, you know, to be suddenly the spotlight on you must be exhilarating and also kind of weird at the same time.
Yeah. Well, it's surprising to realize how many people. It's just funny because, like, at first people were saying, oh, she's the first one to win a backyard ultra. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Katie got there on a golden ticket.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Obviously, no one, I didn't think, thought women couldn't win this format. They just haven't.
Yeah.
And it happened to be Biggs that no woman's won. It happened to be the first year he made it the world championship. So I think that was, like, the big thing.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it's funny. And at the same time, I enjoy talking about the people in the race with me more, because like it's just more interesting because there's so many, everyone becomes a character and Laz makes them that way.
Yeah.
And he writes these Facebook updates and
My wife, who's a trail runner, you know, but doesn't run ultra distance and doesn't was absolutely captivated by Laz's Facebook updates. And it's interesting, isn't it? He's this character, and you sort of, the way that he was writing was so reflective and positive and uplifting, and it was beautiful. It was really mm-hmm. it made it so much more, I think.
Yeah.
And actually having
he is a gift, that's for sure.
Having stood on the, you know, having been involved as one of the race directors for the relapse in New Zealand, you know, standing on that start and finish line for, you know, however long it went, for 30 hours, it was incredible just how it comes back to that thing, isn't it? It's more than the sum of its parts. It's mm-hmm. it's that relationship. It's everything that makes it so fantastic.
And Laz himself is like, I feel like, the Midas of race directing.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, you know, people can try to imitate the Barkley or this backyard thing, and you know, he has Volstate, which is this like crazy race across Tennessee that you just run on your own. It's just genius.
Well, it feels like there'll be more and more uncovered, hey, because that's the thing. He does so much more than just Barclays and Biggs. And mm-hmm. so for ages it was Barclays, and then sort of everyone went, wait, he's got this thing called Biggs as well. Oh, my goodness, what's that? And then mm-hmm. there's the other thing. I think I was listening to Trail Runner Nation. They were talking about someone, you know, all his other races that he does. This is a while ago, and it's like, goodness me, he does like a 24-hour thing and, yeah, runs across Tennessee. And incredible.
They all have their own spin, yeah. A race for the ages, I think, is the one where whatever your age is, you run for that many hours, and whoever gets the most miles wins. So if you're a strong 70-year-old guy or female or whatever,
you're in.
You're not going to beat, you're going to beat the 24-year-old. That's for sure.
Where on earth, how does he think of these things?
I don't know.
but more than that, how does he pull them off? I mean, I guess, you know, there are sort of inventive people in the world, aren't they? But he, like you say, he has that Midas touch. What is it about
him? Well, he's really smart. I mean, he's a pretty smart guy. He's also really eccentric, and just to hear him talk about his like younger days and just like random stuff he did. It sounds like he just hitchhike around for a while, and he's like, and I never know if he's telling a real story or not, but he said he once lived on $3 a year, and it was the hamburger and candy bar diet. And I don't know. I was like, okay. And he said he was his fittest, skinniest ever during that diet.
Yeah. Well, you would be, wouldn't you? You'd be. And I think it's that thing, is that challenge has what appealed to me as well. And I was, you know, I can be somewhat concrete in my thinking at times, you know, how he starts Barclay with a ciggy and he runs, and he ran marathons for years and years and years and years. And, you know, he just doesn't stay in what you would consider a lane, I guess. You know,
he walked across the country last year as like a 60-something-year-old guy.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, he walked yeah. just before. Oh, yeah. Amazing.
It's yeah. just. And he did. He smokes. He legitly smokes. He's always smoking. And yeah, it's incredible.
So it's not a gimmick. It's not just the one-off.
No, he said he started smoking the same year he started running.
It comes with his own health warning.
Yeah.
But I mean, you. It seems that you, when you look through Ultra Sign Up, it seems that you go for a lot of less high-profile races and the sort of races that have a little bit more character about them. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I've gone after some of the big hype ones like Western yeah, States and stuff. And it's a cool experience, but like, I don't know. I kind of got caught up in that and I was like, this isn't really that fun. I don't know, because I would kind of feel like pressure to do that
right.
and then do well. And if you don't, it's like, oh, devastating. But then, you know, then you kind of like don't make room for the things that really speak to you. So now I just try to pick the things that I'm most excited about.
Yeah.
And I made Barkley. I knew I wanted to make Barkley a project. And I didn't think I was going to finish on my first time. I try each time and I try to learn. But I know it's probably going to be a few years. So that's like always going to be my spring goal as long as I can get in.
And so that's obviously the thing that I mean, you did well at Western States. You were eighth in 2016, was it?
Yeah, I was eighth, yeah, that year.
Yeah, which comes with, a not an inconsiderable amount of attention and pressure, but something like Barclay, which is the polar opposite of something like Western, that's what really sings to you, yeah?
Yeah, there's so many challenges. I mean, it's like a puzzle, it is. It's just like so many different factors, and the training is really cool. I didn't train for bigs too much differently than I would like a regular 100 miler. But bigs is just different. I don't train like that for any other race really.
Yeah.
Again, maybe if I got into Hard Rock, I don't know. Well, I guess I would probably do a lot of high altitude running if I could that early.
Yeah.
But for bigs, it's just a lot of up and down.
For Barclay.
For Barkley, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So when you say, I think you said that you trained well for the first year. So what, mm-hmm. and it didn't go so well last year because you were moving and so on. But so basically, I mean, can you give us an idea of how much vert or how many miles or whatever, you know, what is your training week when you, mm-hmm. when you are training well for Barclay?
Yeah. So I kind of took little pieces of John and Kelly and Gary Robbins training, mm-hmm. And made those goals. I kept track of vert really closely for the first time in my entire life. Like mileage I keep track of, but I was more concerned about vert, and I was hitting those goals, like the same things that, you know, vert wise that, you know, John Kelly was doing the year he finished. I also had a Nordic track incline trainer at the time, which right. we've moved every year since we got that. So when we moved to Durango, I gave it to a friend. But that thing was great because you just hop on it at like, you know, doing 40% for a long time is pretty hard. But
right. yeah.
Plus you want to be able to run and keep some intensity, but I would vary the things, and I would do like sessions where I just hop on and do 3,000 feet and then, you know, later do a workout or do 5,000 feet. And I don't have that this year, but you know, there's like a hill behind our house. So, that was helpful. I think my biggest overnight 12-hour run, I wanted to hit 20,000 feet just like Gary did in his overnight. And I didn't quite hit that. It was like crazy sleet, rain. So I hit 15 that year. Plus I'm not as fast as Gary. So like, I mean, you know, I'd like to try to be do 20,000. I could do it. I think I would have to do 16 hours. At the same time, I don't want to do something where it takes a ton of recovery.
Right. Yeah. Getting that mix right is hard.
Yeah.
And then the
second year I got 17,000. So maybe I'll get close this year. I don't know.
That was captivating watching him, and I know Ethan Newbury went and, you know, filmed it, and he had, but just, and anyone doing that, the notion of anyone doing that, that attracts me so much. Just go out for a night and just do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was just such, like, you're right, it's like a puzzle.
Bigger hill too. I think that hill was like 2,000 feet, wasn't it?
Oh, it was massive and covered in snow.
Yeah.
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 Talk about suffering.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, there was poor Gary.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Goodness me.
Speaking of Barclays and Kiwis, who, you know, Katie and Will came out at Bergs. We had Greg Hamilton turned up at Barclay last year and sort of surprised everyone. He's been a bit of an enigmatic figure, to be honest. He went to ground and was a bit quiet. Do you know anything about him?
No. We were trying to figure out how to say his name because it's spelled weird. Everyone's like Greg.
And then the Kiwi accent, it's Greek.
Greek, yeah. And then, well, same thing with Carl. We're calling him Carl, but it's Carell or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The guy that has the AT record now, both of them, you know, but I feel like that's like the typical guy that can finish Barclays, like this under the radar badass athlete that you didn't know. Like John Kelly was that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably didn't know who Brent Mounie was.
Yeah.
And a lot of people probably still don't. And I mean, yeah. And Greg, he lives that, eh? He was very polite. He's the only person that's ever turned us down. We got in contact with him. He was like, nope,
I don't have anything interesting to say. It's like, what? You're kidding.
Full stop.
It's so funny.
End of. But
he's
that's one.
Keep my low profile.
Yeah.
That's him. And more power to him in that sense, you know? Like, it was. But I think you're right.
Come on Dirt Church Radio, Greg, if you're listening.
He's not listening.
So you're focused on Barclay. You've got a that's next, but you've have got Bergs in the background, and we saw last week that roster come out with the such big names. Has that fired you up?
I'm excited. It doesn't change how I would approach it or anything. Like, again, it doesn't matter. I'm excited though, because like a lot of like Johan will be back and Courtney and everybody. So there's some new people coming to try it out. A lot of different 24-hour. I think there's a few other 24-hour runners I know that applied. That I think Laz is just waiting to see how the golden ticket races pan out before he fills in any more people from the wait list. So I think it'll just get even more stellar. Like plus, like those guys that come from far away, like you know Katie and Will and all them, like. They had a long plane ride to get there. You know, you're not going to just quit.
Yeah.
So easy. Cause like not, you know, it's a long way to go. So I think everyone's going to kind of come expecting to run.
Yeah.
And
four days or so.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's just going to lay it down. Yeah.
Just really, as Katie said, well, that escalated quickly.
And on paper, to be honest, on paper, it's all like, it should go for a week, but like, again, we had that on paper this year.
Absolutely.
And the second night, and I was like, wow, there's still so many people the second night. And what happened by the third morning, we were down to four again.
Yeah.
I guess what you
and
have.
And last year, the third morning, they had five. Yeah. So, like, it's a lot. Two nights is already really just crazy.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it? The distance has to be respected. Not the distance, the metric of time has to be respected. And I guess what you have is you have athletes who are perhaps more well-known, you know, and that almost changes, and it shouldn't, but it does. It sort of, you know, it doesn't mean that because Camille Herron's coming, she's going to win. You know, it doesn't mean that because, or even that she's going to go for three nights or whatever, you know, necessarily. I'm just using her name randomly. Anything could happen at any time, right?
Right. And I mean, a lot of the faster athletes, it might be a disadvantage because, you know, that I don't know if Camille's ever run for two nights or three nights because, you know, people who are faster are done before that and in their beds while we're all still running.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm glad. I wish I had that third night experience. But, you know. We'll figure it out when I get there because, you know, I've only been up for two nights, so.
I don't doubt you can go the distance. It's, you know.
Yeah.
You were so strong. You were so strong at the end there that I think everyone should be shaking in their boots.
Well, I think what it's going to come down to, because sleep is going to play a factor for everyone no matter who you are. If it gets to that fourth day, it'll be who can just survive on the trail the longest. So if you're not a strong trail runner and you weren't already having a bit of a cushion, then you're going to see people just kind of fall off. Mm-hmm. I think getting to a fourth night will be very challenging, and I think it would be possible, but I don't, yeah, it will be interesting. Mm.
I love that as well, that not only does Les put in the, you know, this race goes on forever. Like you said, you have to be, or it's a benefit of you to be a strong trail runner, because Katie highlighted that, you know, we thought our race was pretty technical, but she highlighted that, you know, with the rocks and everything, it was more technical than she perhaps thought it was. And that certainly plays a part. You know, you've got to have sort of magic feet a bit, don't you?
Yeah. And, well, as Will and I discovered on that third day, I mean, it was windy. So there all these leaves fell, which, Laz had kind of raked the leaves for us. And then the leaves just appeared, and it's rocky. And your feet are tired. So it's not an easy trail.
Yeah. Nature's leaf blower.
Can I ask a real running nerd question? What shoes did you use?
I used the Ultra Olympus for most of the trail part. And then the Ultra Duo for the road part.
Cool. And your feet held up?
I mean, yeah, they did. Yeah. I mean, that's usually what hurts the worst, but I didn't really have any blisters. I used the Drymax hiking socks. They're not even running socks, but they're so thick. I think that helps. Right. For me, I need thicker socks. And then padding. I use trail toes. I don't know if you guys have trail toes there. It's from Texas.
No. What are they?
Is it it's a lube for your feet anywhere. Okay. Yeah. And you just kind of apply like a thick layer, and then I put the socks on, and it held up pretty good. I mean, and then obviously that third day it rained like the whole time. So that's probably when I had the most like little things pop up, just when they were wet. But otherwise, it was pretty good.
Awesome. Hey, look, Maggie, we're aware that you've made time for us. You've talked to a million podcasts. You know, you said you're actually behind the sausages made. You're in between meetings. So we'll let you go. But we ask one question of everyone who comes on Dirt Church Radio. And that's, hey, Maggie, what's your greatest run ever?
Greatest run ever.
It doesn't have to be a race or anything, just a run that really sings to you.
Yeah. Well, I don't have one that sticks out in mind, but it's usually the ones you didn't want to do that end up being like the most amazing. A lot of times those are like late night runs, or like you get home and it's dark. Like we were talking about daylight savings earlier, and you get home after work and it's dark and you throw a headlamp on, and you don't want to go out. Like those are sometimes the best ones. But I would definitely be lying to not say that Biggs wasn't the best run.
Yeah, it's a good run.
I just felt so good the whole time, and it was fun, and like I enjoyed every minute of it, mostly from what I remember.
That is, I mean, you can totally legitimately take that as your greatest run ever. That I think, absolutely. But I know what you mean about those runs that you don't necessarily want to go out on. That how often do they turn out to be runs that you just love? It's so true. Yeah.
No one ever says they regretted that, you know.
Absolutely.
Not usually.
Right. Absolutely.
Sometimes.
All right, Maggie. Hey, thank you so much, and we'll let you get back to work. And we really, really appreciate it, and can't wait to see how you get on at Barclay.
And congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much, guys.
I can't believe you mentioned Lord of the Rings again.
Like, well,
are you ever going to get over that?
No, it's a great book. It's lyrical, you know, the metaphors in it, the First World War and everything, like when Gollum is leading Sam and Frodo through the dead marshes, and how that, you know, it ties directly into Tolkien's experiences in the trenches in World War One. No, I'm never going to get over it.
You're never going to get
never going to get over it. Mm,
it's going to be a thing,
even the language behind that.
I think Maggie was kind of laughing awkwardly because she could tell that there was tension.
There's tension in the room.
Yeah, but thank you, Maggie. That was amazing. And please come out to Tarawera. Please, Mark, come on. You've got to come through and get Maggie out to Tarawera. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? Thank you for your time. I know that you know you could tell that Maggie has done a lot of interviews since then, so we really appreciated her coming on the show. And I think that connection with Will and Katie really helped.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad we could ask you some different questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you everyone for listening. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. Email dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Yep.
Other podcast platforms.
Other ones that haven't even been invented yet. We're
Podbean.
You can download direct from the website, dirtchurchradio.com. If we're not where you are, we're not where you are.
If we're not where you want us, let us know. It would be as great as many people heard the show as possible, and for that, we need your help. Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever.
Don't hesitate. Don't be like Tina.
Do it.
Don't be like
Thanks
Tina.
Thanks to our sponsors, Thank Scott Running, Tina. Further Faster, Cielli, Spring Energy, and also our Patreon supporters. We're on Patreon at patreon.com/dirtchurchradio.
Yeah. Thanks for the mic.
Yeah, thanks for the mic.
Patreon supporters. Thank you to our editor, Kieran. We've got another really great guest lined up for next week, so tune in then.
Ka kite.
Thanks, Rigby.
Cool. Okay, we've stopped recording.
Oh, shit.
Did you? Yeah.